You are listening to an adult formation edition of our podcast from St. Thomas Episcopal Church in Bellevue, Washington. We are a community that seeks God's presence, serves Christ and others, and grows together in faith. Welcome to our podcast. The following presentation is part of our six-part series, The Languages of Love. This session was presented by the Reverend Steve Best on Wednesday, June 1st, 2016.
Okay, everybody, let's get started. If you were not here last week and you want a handout, or any other previous weeks, I keep forgetting to mention that we've got the handouts and questions. So if you need anything, just come up and see me at some point, or come up now and I'll show you the right way. Well, first of all, Karen sends her love, and I guess it would be in words of affirmation, because she's at a continuing education class, and she said she was super saturated, and I said, oh, well, I can take care of the class. You've done the last two, and I said, I'm up to bat, and I'm feeling good. But she will join us for next Wednesday, which will be our concluding class in the series, and I think we mentioned before that that class will start in the same way we've always done it, with a great dinner, but we have a special worship experience that will be part of the evening. So don't get scared. It won't be too out of the norm, but I just we felt that there would be a nice way to pull together everything we've done and experience some worship that will get at the themes that we've been experiencing, and also healing and thanksgiving and all those good things. So anyway, next week, I can't believe it, it's gone by fast for us, but that will be our concluding Wednesday. So tonight, we get to talk about the fourth love language, which is touch. And I have to say, I don't think there is, if you look at the five love languages, I think touch right now probably has the most conflicting messages around it, given where our culture is right now. I mean, on one hand, we've got all this great scientific research is coming in about mind-body work, and gosh, the number of health practitioners that are emerging that are incorporating touch is wonderful, because we have such high tech going on in medicine. It's really wonderful to see the high touch that's happening. And yet, all this research, you know, points to the importance of bonding and holding, you know, some of the experiences that adoptive families have had with some of their children that have come from other countries where there isn't enough touch and bonding. You know, we're seeing attachment problems. We're seeing even brain development issues. It's just amazing once they come into a family where there is touch and those healthy characteristics that we look for in well-functioning families, then even, you know, IQ scores begin to come up. So there's a really strong connection between our touch and our internal emotional well-being. So we've got all that great stuff going on, and any of you that have been in any kind of situation, like I was in a car accident a while back, and then later I was I pulled my back out, of all things, getting Christmas decorations from the attic, and I was on my knees the next morning. I didn't realize what I had done, and I'll tell you, almost nothing worked. You know, I knew I didn't want any kind of like radical surgery or anything like that. But I remember therapeutic massage was the one thing. I did some chiropractic stuff too, but that was the thing that really seemed to work. And I realized too, when I was getting the massage, that I didn't want it to go away. You know, and now I'm trying to figure out how to work that into my budget. But I was just really interested in that experience, because not only did I feel like my back was improving, but I felt my mood and mental health and all that stuff is improving, and I couldn't believe all the stress, you know, we're carrying in our bodies. And so, anyway, all these wonderful ways that touch makes a difference in our emotional and physical well-being. So we have all that good stuff going on, and yet we live in a culture right now in which there are all of these very strict boundaries that are coming into place. And so anyone working in the church, for example, with kids especially and vulnerable folks, we have all this extensive boundary stuff, and we're being encouraged, you know, to not hug because it can send a message that can be wrong. In some cases, we've got folks who are exploitive. So we live in a culture that I think in some ways is responding well to the fact that we know that a lot of people have been physically and sexually abused, but it feels like an overreaction. So that's what I mean by this particular love language seems to be, in my mind, the most conflicted right now. Would you agree with me that this seems to be kind of a challenge? You know, words of affirmation, it's hard to get in trouble for affirming people. You know what I mean? And these other love languages. But the touch seems particularly loaded. So here we are finding ourselves with this wonderful gift of touch. I believe of all the five senses, touch probably represents our humanity in the fullest way possible. I mean, think about all those receptors that we have. They're all through our body. I mean, literally every part of our body can register a touch. And I think that makes us human. I mean, I think of all this stuff with robots and stuff. There's something about being embodied that makes our humanity very, very special, and I believe cannot, if there's a knowledge, a body knowledge that can't be replicated by what robots are able to do. So there, it really gets at the definition of being human is to be able to feel. And of course, all those sensitivities, you know, like our fingers have a lot more receptors than I guess the middle of your back doesn't have too much, but I know the lower back does because my back was in pain. But I just feel like, I mean, think about the special times that you've had in your life. Maybe it was when you had a really joyful experience and folks gave you this wonderful hug. Maybe it was a time when there was a crisis in your life and you felt that you needed to be very reassured. And think about the words that often don't come. You know, for words of affirmation, people like myself, there are actually times where we don't know what to say. And it's better, I think, to be able to give a touch. So think of all that, you know, hot and cold, rough and soft, pain or pleasure. All of that is what is in the mix when we talk about touch. Our survival of our species depends on our sexuality, for example, and that's a really important part of our humanity. And I'm so happy that in church these days we get to talk a little more openly. I don't know about you, I'm going to date myself, but I remember the discussion in our church. I never heard a sermon that had anything to do with sexuality. Okay? Raise your hand if you're in the same demographic. In the youth group, there were certain discussions about sexuality, and most of them had to do with what not to do. Okay. But this is not a couple seminar we're doing tonight, but I don't want to ignore the topic of sexuality because truly it's a gift from God. And think of the ways in which sexuality validates a relationship and so forth. So that's also part of it. And I hope I don't shock anyone when I say that, you know, Jesus himself was a sexual being. I don't have to have him in my own mind married to Mary Magdalene, but just to forget, if he was fully human, he also had a sexual experience. And I won't go farther than that because I might be run out of town. But just if he's fully a man, he had sexual thoughts at least. I'll stay there, okay? So it's all about humanity and being fully alive, and touch is what validates the fact we're human and not a machine. I knew I was going to get something. Okay, Joseph.
Okay. I'll tell you a quick little story about St. Thomas. This is unbelievable. One of our new members that is relatively new shared with me, she said, when she came to St. Thomas, she was just in awe at the peace we would go around and shake hands and even hug each other. Wow.
Now, some of you can remember when the peace was not exchanged in the Episcopal Church. Do you remember that? Okay. So, I don't know if I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but that was not an easy transition, right? The funny thing, when Lex, our rector, arrived, you know, coming from another part of the country, you know, being the gregarious person that he is, I just remember that first few Sundays where, like, you know, he was a big bear hug and maybe a kiss on the cheek and stuff like that. And I go, he is clearly not from around here. And yet I think most of us would say that openness maybe has brought more expression to this amazing love language. But again, that's something that we all as a community need. I remember one person who will not be named was taken aback, like, oh my gosh, you know, that's just too much. So this is, we'll talk a little later, but I think basically, and I'm actually going to ask you, it's one of the questions in the for the small group discussion, is some of those experiences in worship where you recognize where touch happens, and whether we're really representing the love language that Jesus showed in touch in the fullest way possible. So there you go. So, Joseph, I think we would say we're a warmer community, or at least we're expressing our warmth more openly. That would maybe be the way. I think there's always been a heart, a warmth in this place, but I think the ability to show it and demonstrate it has changed. And I think it's a good thing. I think it's a very good thing. So let's get back to touch and relationships. So basically, we find touch is a key player in all stages of a relationship. So when we think, at least in our part of the woods, and particularly in Western culture, or at least let's say Northern European culture, anybody that's been to, you know, Greece and Italy, we know that there's different boundaries in those countries, right? But you think of the handshake as the beginning of a relationship in terms of what is allowed in touch. And, you know, historians differ, you know, on, like, okay, what's the handshake about? But I like the explanation that it at least shows the possibility of friendship and that you have no weapon in your hand. And in some neighborhoods, I think that's a really important first step. So that's the beginning. But think of touch as always in play throughout the life cycle of a relationship from the beginning to the end. Think of, some of you have had the tender experience of holding a child or a grandchild, a niece or a nephew. We start with touch. I mean, I remember when Rachel was born, I was holding her for the very first time. Obviously, she couldn't talk, and I was at a loss for words. I mean, I felt like I was just, I knew my world had changed. I just didn't know how radical that change was. Holding her and feeling this love. It was all about touch. And I was really impressed with the medical folks who were also kind of modeling to us the touch that's required, not just hiding behind machines and procedures. And then think of those tender moments, you know, my goodness, you know, we ritualize it, you know, in the wedding ceremonies, you know, where the two parties are holding hands and they're being blessed. And I can remember to this day, I mean, I've been married 26 years, when our priest gave us a blessing and put his hand on each of our heads. I can still feel the pressure on my head. It was just a lovely, like, I'm with you, and this community, whether you change churches or not, is going to travel with you. And that was conveyed in touch. And see, my memory of that touch actually is stronger in that instance than the rest of the words in that ceremony. Although Janie's already gone, I did help her out with the words. Our priest made us memorize the vows. I never make a couple do that anymore. It's just, it's too much. So I went first, and then I just whispered to Janie. And then the priest called out, See, they're already helping each other. And then my wife died 1,000 deaths. We should just have stayed with the blessing. That would have been just perfect. So a handshake can turn into a hug, can turn into a kiss, and then our intimate romantic partnerships, making of love. So notice in our psyches, the absence of touch and the presence of touch is constantly being registered. Sometimes we're barely aware of the fact that we've been touched, and other times we crave a hug, and sometimes we find that we're not able to find that connection. That's my biggest case for having a pet. I think of all of the when my grandmother was in an assisted care facility, we used to bring our beloved lab with the permission of the staff there, and I can tell you, you know, there was lots of folks with processing issues. But I'll tell you, people could come along and pet our lab, Jilly, and you could see in their face how things were transformed. So I'm really big on the care of pets. This is a very tender point. We lost, I was telling some folks today, we lost our Linus on the Prayers of the People. Now, we call it the Prayers of the People, but we need to find a more inclusive term, because Linus... Lex said, okay, go ahead and put Linus on the, prayers for the departed. And I said, everyone will know that that's not a, who names their kid Linus? But when I think of the touch ministry that animals have, and particularly pets in our household, we have one who, we have Zoe, who is still with us. She believes that touch is the normal state, and to be separate from us is abnormal. But think of that. Think of the power of touch. This is all part of God's plan, is for us to be connected in this way. I hope I'm not too sappy. I love animals. So let's talk a little more about those with primary love language, a love language of touch. Is it okay if I just ask you to raise your hand? Yeah. Do we have a few? Joseph? Yeah. Two guys. Okay. Do we have...
Good.
Love language, primary love language of touch. I just was curious. Okay. Four? Okay, wonderful. Great. So you correct me, because this is not my primary language, but I'll tell you, I long for it. I feel like there's so few places now, because everything, as a therapist, as a priest, I really feel like I'm always watching my boundaries. So I don't want to send messages that are confusing to people. And then I go, wow, that massage stuff really awakened me. It's like, I'm not getting enough touch, It's really, I think, tricky. But anyway, one of the things that I've noticed with people with this love language is that, and this is true for all the love languages, the very vehicle that helps you feel loved and secure is also your most vulnerable point. So to not have enough hugging, for example, is painful. It can be painful. But also, if you have experiences when you were growing up, maybe you grew up in a family where there was abuse. So if it was the physical abuse, the slap, that kind of thing, actually, if you have, it's hard for everybody. I don't want to make it sound like, okay, only if you only have the love language of touch, it's going to hurt you more. But there's something about that conflicting need to have the touch, but also the experience of having been hurt badly in that area. So that's really one of the vulnerabilities with this love language type. I think it's a vulnerability we all have, but especially manifest in this. The other thing is, when we're giving the peace, this would be something for us to think about as a community. There's a large number of people who have been abused physically or sexually. So for us to just kind of go up and assume that they want to be, that everyone wants to be hugged, we really need to be careful about that. And I think it's really important first to start with a smile and then wait for the other person. Maybe it's going to be a handshake. And then over time, when you build a relationship with somebody. And hopefully, if you're like most Episcopalians who sit in the same pew every time you come, you start to understand what people need. But I think that's a very important point. I am really thankful, though, that we have it ritualized, because that takes some of the pressure off folks that really want to be hugged, but if they had to initiate it, they may not do it. But if it's a ritual that we're all participating in, then it gives permission for people to hug. So that's the kind of flip side. Any thoughts about this? Because I don't want to misrepresent anybody's point of view on this one, but I think it's both a blessing and a challenge. What other parts of our service do you think on a Sunday might include touch?
Another incident. Yeah. Being from the Midwest, our family, whenever we met, always hugged each other. That was just a way of greeting.
Yeah.
Like you see in the French movies and whatnot, where a little kiss on each cheek type thing. You know, it's the custom. And so I do a lot of interactivities with different organizations, and they all seem to be another family for me, because I don't have an immediate family except for my honey here now. And so I learned earlier when I moved up here to Seattle area, sometimes when you get ready to give somebody a hug, you have to sort of, may I give you a hug?
Yeah. Yeah, you're asking permission. That's really wonderful. And I'm glad you mentioned, I mean, there's regional differences, there's cultural and their family differences. So some of you have seen The Big Fat Greek Wedding. I haven't seen the sequel, but the first one. You know, my family was the WASP family, okay? It was not the Greek family, okay? So things were contained. Our emotions were very contained. We knew we were loved, but we weren't very demonstrative, okay? And that's pretty common to, you know, the Northern European mode. When I go to England, Scotland, Ireland, which is all my ancestors, I'm not abnormal. Now, when I go to Italy, it's a growth seminar.
Oh, right. Yeah. And that's why when I lived in Japan, when you come to meet new people, you don't do this, you do this.
Yeah.
No hands.
Yeah. So I want to say that we can either make a relationship or we can break it by the misuse of touch. So imagine for a moment what would happen if Jesus was a God who wasn't allowed to touch us, and we humans were not allowed to touch God. Now, that's a bit of a trick question, because some of you would say, now, how do we touch God? Well, God dwells within each of us, right? We're told that our bodies are a temple, and the Spirit of God is within us. So literally, God allows us, when we embrace someone else, to touch God, to touch Jesus. And His earthly ministry demonstrates time and time again the power of touch. Think of, first of all, if there was any touch in the New Testament, what would happen? What would go away? The whole story would fall apart, right? The whole birth story would fall. I mean, Jesus wasn't going to be delivered without someone touching and someone pulling and someone pushing and the swaddling clothes and so forth. So the whole baby manger thing would go away. There'd be very few healings. Think about the healing of the blind, the lame. The leper is actually one of my favorite examples, because many of you know, and the irony is amazing, because you know, in leprosy, right, you've lost the capacity of your nerve endings, you know, Hansen's disease. So isn't it ironic that when you can't touch at all, then you actually have no way of knowing if you're cutting yourself or hurting yourself, and your whole body begins to deteriorate if you cannot touch. But isn't it amazing? In Jesus' day, they didn't understand how that disease worked. They were deathly afraid of getting it. It was a sure ticket to be ostracized. In many cases, it would be your death. Your family abandoned you and so forth. And Jesus made it a point to reach out to the lepers. When you think of all the great saints, Francis of Assisi, St. Augustine, they all go back to their conversion experiences when they embrace the leper. And so it becomes this amazing experience of combating your fear, to reach out. And can you imagine what it'd be like to be on this planet for 30 years and not be touched? You know, this is what Jesus was trying to get at. Was there a question over here? I thought someone was waving, I thought, or maybe I'm just seeing things. Okay. Yeah, okay. Now, what else would be gone? There'd be no story of the prodigal son. Do you remember that climatic moment when the younger son, the prodigal, is coming home from having spent the inheritance? And that amazing scene where the father runs out there and gives the wayward son this big hug, embrace. And that story of forgiveness that happens, that story would go away. Remember the woman with the alabaster jar? Washed Jesus' feet with her hair and the perfume. That would go away. And how about the washing of the feet of the disciples? The blind man, the spittle, you know, that would go away. See what happens? See, I mean, I was kind of amazed this afternoon. I was going through, the gospel, and I'm just saying, what would happen if touch went away? And I started saying, the whole story dissolves.
Isn't Mary trying to grab the garment of Jesus, and he said, don't touch me. You know, I'm on my way to paradise, or...
I think that, are you referring to it? That's a post-resurrection scene.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And that can be kind of confusing because, okay, Jesus has risen, but he hasn't ascended yet. Yeah, so I want to believe that Jesus still wants to be touched, but there was something in that in-between state that it wasn't right. I'd have to do some more work on that. I don't know if anyone has a thought, but that's a good point. That's the only time that I'm aware of that Jesus says anything about not being touched. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. He invited Thomas to touch his wounds.
Yes.
Affirming that this is him.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Because think of it. Okay. Most of us have had some wounds. Can you imagine? I can barely have a trained doctor who's skilled touch a wound, and it's that vulnerability, that story would go away. You know, it's really interesting. We really don't know if the story doesn't say that Thomas actually touched the wound. He was invited to do so, and that itself opened up the possibilities for healing. But Jesus would have gone all the way. You know, it's like if you need to touch, yeah, if you need to touch. So there's a. How about some? See, I love this. Like. Right? You see, the whole gospel evaporates without the touch. And then even after Jesus dies, remember the tender scene of Mary and the other women are anointing the body. They're anointing the body of Jesus, even though he's died. They still believe in the power of touch. It probably helped them heal and come to terms with the loss. And it showed a reverence for life, even though he died in a horrible way. And by the way, think of all the violent touches, the violent, the whipping and all that stuff. So it was like what happened, you know, it seems like touch again is that place where great potential for good is done and then great potential for harm because we're human beings, spiritual beings in a body. And so it makes us vulnerable, to being hurt in a very profound way too. So, the love language that is most clearly incarnational in my mind is the love language of touch. All the love languages are important, but it seems like this particular love language brings Jesus' humanity into full technicolor and helps us see our humanity in broader and deeper terms too. I think it's very powerful. So, and then lastly, I want to share this story. This is a true story that was written by an active Episcopal lay woman who is a minister of healing. And she describes an experience in her church with her ministry of laying on of hands, which I think is just beautiful. So just imagine this particular scene. One warm spring afternoon, a woman enters a small room overlooking the garden courtyard of Trinity Episcopal Church in Iowa City. With a sigh, she removes her headscarf and lies down on the massage table near the window. "It's been a hard week," she says, "but 3 more weeks and I'm done with chemotherapy." As music softly plays on the stereo, I gently place my hands on her feet as we begin our weekly healing touch session. For the next 45 minutes, I visualize divine blessings flowing into her as I practice the ancient form of healing known as laying on of hands. I end our session by anointing the woman's head with frankincense and saying a blessing. Afterwards, she slowly opens her eyes. "There's nowhere else in my life where I can experience this kind of deep relaxation, safety, and peace." She says also, "Thank you. I feel like myself again." Once again, I'm amazed by the sense of quiet grace that blesses these healing touch sessions in our church. So I just open that up as a beautiful story of how the gospel, you know, we have such a premium of gospel being expressed in music here, and then the gospel expressed in preached word. But what about touch? It appears that Jesus' primary mode included touch, and yet most churches, I believe, ours included, seems in my mind to neglect this. So I just leave that with you. I think it's a discovery I made today in looking at all the scriptural verses. I said, maybe we need to bring that back into the foreground and push against some of the cultural restrictions that are saying we can't be touchy. Okay? So I just leave that out for you.
Again, something that I took part in and maybe 20 years ago when... I was in a very low state, and I was asked to join a prayer group, and we met at someone's home over here on Hunts Point, and we had one of the ladies that was there had been diagnosed with heavy-duty cancer, and she had gone to the doctor, and he said, you know, you've got a short period of time because, you know, 50% of your lungs are ready to end. And so she came to the prayer session, and we did a healing hand. So everybody there took part, and if you weren't right next to her, you put your hand on the person in front of you who was putting their hands on her. Yeah. And the next week, when she came back, she said in the interim, she went in for her final set of x-rays and everything, and they said, "It's gone."
Wow.
And this was unbelievable. And she did happen to pass 3 weeks later, but she was in the best positive spirit for those 3 weeks. It was unbelievable.
Right.
And I saw it. I was there. It happened.
Wow, Joseph.
At St. Thomas.
Thank you for that story. Yeah. That's a good story on many, many levels. So I'm just putting that out there. That's one of our questions for tonight. Does everyone have enough on their table? You can move around if you need to be moved. And you can actually hold hands while you do this, if it helps you. There are questions on your table, and I'm going to give you time to discuss it. Then we'll come back as a large group. Okay, everybody. Let's pool our wisdom.
We had a wonderful conversation here about, you know, the subject of touch. One of the things that I shared was in worship and how touch is, and where you, the anointing with the oil on your forehead at the sign of a cross. And that's, to me, feels like a very holy experience. And I remember when we reaffirmed my baptismal vows and Sandy Hampton, in his deep, dark voice, said, put the sign on me and said, "Remember your baptism." So, Steve, like, you remember the pressure on your
head
when you got married, not from getting married. I remember the cross on my forehead and to remember my baptism.
And,
my
and Bishop Sandy has a big hand, as
yes,
I recall.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But just that touch, mm-hmm. those slight touches, or when we go up to communion, some dear friends of ours joined us, Thomas's godmother and her son, and it was his first communion, and when he received the baptism because he had crossed his hands, a very powerful moment for them as well.
Yes. When we think of both the laying on of hands and the anointing with the cross and the oil, I mean, these are ancient practices that go back into Judaism, and there's various reasons. Like, one was always for healing. Some is anointing, like, for kings, queens, and leaders, prophets to be sent out. So those are, like, the two most ancient practices right there. Baptism, you know, everyone talks about the water, and that's exciting, but there's a charismation with the seal. You are sealed by, you know, with Christ's love forever, the Holy Spirit. And then confirmation, the bishop is laying hands on you. Prayers for healing. We actually, I hope most of you know that on Sunday mornings at our services, the prayer station has someone there to pray with you and to offer laying on of hands. And we don't advertise that enough. I think we need to get it in front and center. And then Wednesday mornings are a very nice, intimate service where we have laying on of hands as well and oil. And then ordination of deacons and priests, bishops, last rites. So this touch follows us all the way through because it really gives us a sensory experience of our humanity. And again, we're able to touch God as he touches us. So it's a beautiful, beautiful story. I'm trying to replicate that hand. I don't quite have that Bishop Sandy hand. But you remember it, don't you? Yeah.
Okay, another interesting point to the prayer station. They call it the prayer station, and it's not always for healing. If you have a birthday, an anniversary, or something, you can come over and get a blessing. Those of us who do that are trained and give the oil, because it's not just for healing, it's for congratulation also.
Yes, thank you.
How'd this table do?
Each of us spoke about the power. One of the things we talked about, power of having, Dwight was mentioning, a wedding ceremony where the hands are wrapped at the end.
Tying the knot.
Tying the knot, and the feeling of just the significance of that. Very moving part of the ceremony where you just really felt God's blessing and permanence and that kind of a thing. I always talked about also how children who have failure to thrive, there's a therapy that involves parents being instructed to rock the children in a rhythmic kind of skin-to-skin, touching the skin but holding the child tight so he can't escape, and just saying, you're mine, you're home, you're home. And how a child would go from a failure to thrive, who hasn't grown for a number of years, to a point where maybe they grow 6 inches in a year.
Right.
It's just dramatic change. And pets and the importance of, you know, touch, just generally.
Well, I shared an experience of touch in this church. I went through confirmation a couple of years ago. And the bishop came, of course, to do that and puts his hand on your head. And I felt this odd, surprising, shock-like feeling.
Yeah.
When they're like that kind of thing when you get a shock, electric shock.
Right.
and I just put that away. And I talked to the bishop later and asked him, does that anyone ever comment on something like that? And he says, yeah, occasionally I hear that. He didn't want to make too big a deal about it. And then sometime later, wasn't even talking about it, but Lex happened to mention his confirmation when he was a young boy, and he had the exact same kind of experience. And so it just makes you think about that apostolic progression.
Yes.
And how powerful that could be as kind of a mystic experience.
Definitely.
And, you know, it's just something I'll never, ever forget here.
Yeah. And I would argue that it's hard to imagine that happening without touch. I mean, that's it, you know.
Well, we talked a lot about the healing hands and the feel of, I remember when I was going through Curcio, and at the end there, 50 people put their hands on your head by electricity, and it was a very moving thing. And also the evolution of touching in the Episcopal Church is an interesting thing, because the peace, it seemed like the peace and AIDS arrived at the same time. And so we, in our church in California, we had an openly gay assistant minister, and we held a parish meeting, and he explained how he became outwardly gay, and I was ready to give him a hug before and after he told us these things, but the power of touch is very important.
Okay, Steve.
All right. So, any ideas about how to enhance the ministry of touch within parish, within relationships? Anything that some brainstorming there? Do we fall short? Are we giving touch enough attention? Too little? Too much?
Please raise your hand. Good. Keeps me healthy.
We had two people at our table that don't receive the wine during communion, but do they get a blessing by touch from the minister, which is very moving to them, and that's something that could be emphasized a little more.
Great. In fact, we have to be generous. Maybe you could have the bread and the wine and a blessing. Yeah.
Oh, good.
I mean, one way to look at it, the bread and the wine is a blessing. But often, again, love language, it's nice to have the words, too.
I had a mother say that her little girl, it was okay for the priest, when she had her arms crossed, that the priest would a blessing, and then the person with the wine would give a blessing, but she wanted both of the people. Both of the
people. Oh, a double blessing.
Not just one.
Yeah.
Both.
She figured out the system early. Yeah, she's got a future. She's got a future in the church.
I'm just trying to figure out how to get seconds at the altar rail. But actually, Steve, you started talking about the science and what we're learning more about the importance of the physicality of touch. And we learned that the difference between when Thomas was born 5 years ago and Lauren 2.5 years ago was that I got to cut the cord for Thomas, and then they got him on Julie's chest as soon as possible, skin-to-skin contact. With Lauren, they want to put her before they even cut the umbilical cord. I mean, seconds count for bonding mother and child, and so that's the practice if all goes well. The other thing, you know, of course, we talked about respecting people's boundaries as well and working that. So I don't have anything specific about our worship or how we practice our faith, but I will say that helping us all understand the important nature of touch and that it is part of how God has made us, as well as also being respectful of people's boundaries and being able to learn and interpret what those are so that we can grow closer together.
Wonderful. Yeah, I would like to encourage you. I hope this conversation opens up a lot of things. So when you hear the gospel readings, that you'll be listening for touch. When you see opportunities for sacramental events around touch, because I think the sacramental ritual creates boundaries and safety for people, you'll start seeing a dimension. And I hope the gospel becomes more alive and more real. I think making God real is what it's all about. And I think that touch is critical. And there's some wonderful healing opportunities and services available in the church. Also, you may feel called to be in the ministry of healing and touch. maybe one of your callings, and I hope that you would talk to somebody here to get empowered to do that. I have a very good friend that trained her dog to go to children's hospital, and some of those children that were so sick, and they all they could think about is how much pain they were in. When they saw, at one time she brought her dog, and she happened to have a cast on the dog's foot because the dog had suffered an injury. You would not believe the compassion the kids were able to show towards that dog. And for an afternoon, they got a reprieve, you know, from their suffering. So this is really important stuff. And I hope that it opens up more conversation for us in the future because it's really important. And our culture is super conflicted about it. Just own that. We're conflicted. And I think we're called to move through the barriers and find the middle way. Isn't that great? Good Anglican middle way between the extremes. So are there any more questions, anything? We're looking forward to next Wednesday. And again, we're going to have a worship experience that should be really wonderful. And it will include probably the possibility of touch. Blessings. Go in peace to love and serve the Lord.
For more information about St. Thomas Episcopal Church, please visit our website, www.stthomasmedina.org. That's www.stthomasmedina.org.